coming up later in the episode.
Black creative, it means everything. You are the originator, the cultivator of so many things that people will steal, want to be part of. And I think that being a Black creator requires strength and fortitude, but also like you are an original. Like, I think there's a lot of people that don't even think of themselves as creatives or creators. We do create a lot of things. We create a lot of things that we don't get credit for. That's what I would say. It's everything. Like, being a Black creator is everything.
This is Still Talking Black, a show about giving perspectives to issues that minorities face every day. I'm your host, Richard Dodds. Today's episode is all about Black creatives. Later in the episode, I talk to a fellow creator and podcaster, Shannon King of Not Your Enemy Speak Out Sessions, about what it means to be a Black creative. From music to theater to art, so much of ourselves, our ups, downs, our joy, and our pain go into our craft. From transcendent artists like Nina Simone, who used her music as a way of helping to spread her message of Black empowerment, to Maya Angelou, who used her poetic words to instill self-worth. I feel like more than any other people, Black people put so much of ourselves in the things that we do. Our art has always been a way of telling our stories. It goes all the way back to the Negro spirituals, which told stories of their past, stories of hope, stories of loss, and history. And many times, these spirituals held double meanings. Spirituals were a way for slaves to express themselves. Sometimes stories of hope were really messages of how to escape. You can hear the influences of spirituals in many other genres of music, from blues to gospel and even hip hop. I feel like more than any other genre of music, hip hop and rap have carried on the feeling of the artful protest and storytelling. Songs like Jay-Z, Story of OJ, NWA's F the Police, and Public Enemy's Fight the Power are all great examples of protest through rhythmic words and soul-filled beats. The level of artistry will have you nodding your head before you fully grasp the true meaning of their words. There are many artists that are still carrying the torch of protest music today. Artists like Toby Enwigwe's song, I Need You Too, that calls for justice for Breonna Taylor. One of my favorite is Joyner Lucas's I'm Not Racist. I must admit, when I first saw the music video for this song, I was taken a little bit aback. The song has two men sitting across from each other at a table, one Black and one Caucasian. Joyner is not in the video at all. Instead, it's two actors, starting with the Caucasian man wearing a MAGA hat, giving his perspective on Black people from his skewed point of view, uttering I'm not racist after lines that could be taken as offensive. The second verse turns the tables to the Black man, who responds to the things that he's just heard. By the end of the video, they hug as they both try to understand each other better. I think the thing that really makes this so powerful is the way that it cleverly shows how not understanding someone's perspective can skew the way that you view an individual or a group of individuals. A lot of misconceptions are born from a lack of understanding, and I believe this is a lesson that we all need to learn. Moving from rap to soul, Joseph Angel's American Funeral talks about the unfair treatment and views of minorities in America. From there to the rock band Algiers, whose frontman and lyricist Franklin James Fisher says, quote, a reoccurring theme in our music is the idea of injustice and the bitter understanding that obtaining justice in this world is all but impossible, particularly for Black and brown people, end quote. On their 2017 release Cleveland, they gave the description of their song on their Instagram. Quote, it is about the institutional murder of Black people, a lamentation for those who've lost their lives within this context, and an indictment of those responsible, end quote. There are many more examples in music, but let's move to television. In 2019, Netflix released the miniseries When They See Us, directed and co-written by Ava DuVernay. When They See Us is based off the true story of the Central Park Five, which involved five minorities accused and convicted of a vicious attack in Central Park on April 19, 1989. It showed the pain of seeing young minorities be charged and convicted of crimes that they didn't commit, and later shows the same of the treatment they received after being fully exonerated. This was one of those things that was hard to watch, but it's definitely necessary viewing. Also, that same year in 2019, the movie Just Mercy, starring Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, was released. It was a completely different story, but it had very similar themes. Just Mercy is a biographical movie based on Bryan Stevenson, a Harvard Law graduate that went to Alabama to fight for inmates on death row that could not afford proper legal representation. There are many movies, songs, poems, and other expressions of art, but these are some that stick out in my mind. Some of our art is meant to invoke the feelings that the artist was feeling or felt. Some of it is a not-so-silent protest to the oppressions that we've faced and still face. Some of it simply tells stories that should never be forgotten, stories that everyone should know. There are so many different ways that we use our art. We are known for being soulful, and I wonder how much of that soul comes from the pain that our ancestors have faced and the injustices that we still face today. If you're like what we're doing here on Still Talking Black, the best way to show your support is by liking, rating, and sharing our content. Another way to help is by making a donation using the link in the episode description. We are currently looking for advertising partners. If you're interested in the possibility of advertising on our show, please send all inquiries to advertise@stilltalkingblack.com. Who is Shannon King?
I'm still figuring that out. To be quite honest, I would love to call myself a creative. I feel like my mind has always been in that creative space and realm. But I think I've just now solidified where I'm at, like where I'm at and who I am and what I'm capable of. So for me, unapologetically Black, that's a given always at this point, especially in today's environment and culture. And I just like to create. I like to create and collaborate. That is something that brings me joy and that I'm passionate about. And however that looks and whatever landscape I'm in, that is what I enjoy and love to do. So I'm still figuring out, but that's where I'm at. That's my foundation.
You do podcasts.
I mean, I'm going to list a lot of things, okay? Because again, my mind and creativity and your creative lens can be across a lot of boards.
Right.
Podcast. We also have apparel and things of that nature that are attributed to the podcast. I have a mom blog that is dormant right now because I got levels to this, but a mom blog that is going to come back soon. I'm just trying to get the content and also be a mom at the same time. I work full time. I am like a marketing assistant. So I do all social media marketing for a local nonprofit. And I do consultant work where I do social media work for other businesses. And then I'm also a real estate agent. Add that in there. Yep. Threw that in there for you.
Just a lot of stuff.
Yep. Yep.
Do you feel like being Black makes you have to be good at a lot of different things? Do you feel like your Blackness kind of contributes to you on to be good and work in multiple? Like, does it contribute to the hustle output?
I think being Black makes me work harder. I don't necessarily know if it makes me want to do a bunch of things. I think that's just me individually. And I put a lot of added stress on myself. Mm-hmm. But I think being Black, the standard from at least from my upbringing is that you got to work harder. You got to be better. You got to do better than the most to prove your worth and to prove your value. I don't necessarily know if that's the best lesson to teach you, because then you are always going to feel like you can do better. You're never going to feel like you've made it, because there's always something more you could do. At least, again, I can only speak for myself, but being Black really just made me work harder and made me understand that I had to work harder. That makes sense.
It's very unfortunate to have to say this, but I always feel that in order for, if we're going to like 10, you know what I'm saying? In order to go to 10, we have to play at a 20.
Yeah.
And it's like in order to just to break through in certain places, we have to play on such an exceptional level.
Yes.
That we can be recognized. And only then are we really able to break through.
Yeah.
So when other people are walking, I feel like we have to run just to keep pace, just because of the way the world is right now.
Yeah. And I would agree. Like, I mean, even in certain circumstances in my professional career, you know, like I personally was like, I'm giving my bare minimum. But my bare minimum looks totally different than someone of a different race's bare minimum. You know what I mean? Like my bare minimum in their world is like, I'm overachieving. I'm doing above and beyond the call of what the task was. But I don't know. It's just in me. It's in my blood, man. Like I don't, you know, it's definitely not fair, but I think that it's given me some foundation to be a hard worker, and not everybody has that.
Yeah.
So pros and cons.
No, I definitely would agree with that. So what do you feel like it means to be a Black creative?
Ooh, I mean, everything. If I'm going to be like honest, like Black creative, it means everything. You are the originator, the cultivator of so many things that people will steal, want to be part of. And I think that being a Black creator requires strength and fortitude, but also like you are an original. Like, I think there's a lot of people that don't even think of themselves as creatives or creators. We do create a lot of things. We create a lot of things that we don't get credit for. And so that's what I would say. It's everything. Like being a Black creator is everything. A lot of people are one and just don't even know it.
It's so hard sometimes to look at ourselves at certain things. I remember having a roommate, and he was really good at drawing, and it kind of was like whatever to him. It wasn't a big deal to him, but he didn't know how creative he was.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, I just draw just because. It's like, no, man, you're talented. And for him, it was just like, whatever. Like, I just am what I am.
But see what I'm saying? It's like, oh, like the bare minimum is like, no, you're excellent. You're great. But to us, it's just like, no, all right. Just another day.
One of the things that I talk about is how a lot of times Black creators, you think about musicians like Nina Simone, think about painters like Basquiat, you think about poet Maya Angelou. A lot of times I feel like we put all of our pain and triumph into the things that we do. And I feel like Black people, you feel it more. And it could just because I could be biased because I am Black. But I just feel like so much of who we are gets put into the things that we do on like a whole nother level. I feel like all artists do. But I feel like because of the roots that Black people have, it's just such a deeper level of, you know, joy and pain. Like just listening to Nina Simone's songs, you can just hear the joy and the pain and the torture in her voice. And I feel like more than any other race, we've used our art to communicate and protest.
I mean, I 100% agree. And I think that it comes down to the thing, like you said it best, but our joy and our pain are encompassed in our work or our passions. Because if you think about it, where else are our voices heard? So when you're thinking about, you know, a Black creative, and even like you do athletes or whatever, they take it out on the court, you know, gymnasts or all that stuff. They're taking out whatever they have, whatever joy, pain, happiness, sadness, out on their passion, their purpose, their job. So to me, it kind of goes hand in hand. Like that's our voice. Like for, you know, if I'm art or doing a song, like that is my voice to the world. I think for me personally, anything that I create, anything that I do is like my legacy. That was my voice. That's my story to be told, because very often not Black people's stories don't get told. So it has to be done through your work, through the things that you do, because that might be the only place that you could showcase who you are as a Black creative.
And I think a lot of times the really good stories, sometimes they don't even get the attention that some of the other stories that paint more of a narrative do.
Right.
If we look at the media, the way that sometimes certain things are highlighted and other things aren't.
Yeah.
I feel like that might just be the nature of media and all things. It's like world star culture, you know, a lot of times we're more likely to see a fight than something else.
Yeah. I mean, the negative always will in this world, in this day and time, I think takes precedent over anything positive. But again, you got to think about who's in control of the narrative, which is, again, why I say like Black creatives, just Black people in general, our stories are not told and sometimes not told correctly. So our way to tell our stories is through our own work, because we can't, you know, depend on anybody else to do it.
I think that's why I love that so many Black people are so creative, just because it's another outlet, and it's one that we can control. And right. That's one of the reasons why I do what I do, just because I can have a voice and no one controls his voice but me.
Right.
And right. I could talk about the things that are close to my heart. Just being able to share your voice and being able to talk about the things you don't know how people are going to look at you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something freeing and being able to speak your mind and being able to reach people. And you never know what your words, like how much of a difference that your words can make.
I mean, that's how our podcast, the Not Your Enemy Speak Out Session, started. Me and Jared were just friends talking on the phone, like having a conversation like we're having now. And it turned into us doing Instagram Live. We just like, I want to do shirts that are like positive. I'm angry. Let's do that. And it turned into doing a podcast because we want to Instagram Live. And they're like, you guys should do this regularly. You know, I think that there's, you know, there's power in our voices. And I think we're just now at the precipice of like really understanding the power that we do have and the power of our voice and how we use it and when to use it. And the best way to use it. So I think that, you know, people literally reach out to us. It was not a thing of like, hey, I want to do a podcast tomorrow. It was kind of like an organic way of people were like, you know, that really touched us. So you said that and like, we agree. Y'all should talk about this more. That's how we kind of came into the podcast game. It was just having an honest conversation on social media that turned into something else. And it's because, you know, people are ready to hear and not deal with like all the negative that you see presented to us on, you know, mainstream platforms, because we have our own voice. We could do and say whatever we want.
When I was on y'all show, I don't think y'all really understood that maybe like the first half of the show was basically more or less what I had been cooking up for this show.
No, but when we talked offline, I was like, oh, okay, like perfect segue though.
Like when I was on that show, it kind of helped me give me the motivation to get back to working on this one, just because you remember the audio that I cut for that show for the advertisement?
Yeah.
When I cut that audio, I was like, wow, this is just like basically like a 30-second clip of the stuff that I want to talk about on my show.
Yeah.
And it's like, you two just didn't know that y'all like helped inspire me to get back to it because I had been dragging my feet on it.
Honestly, that was a lot of people that came on the show. It was a lot of people said like, you know, either reached out to us separately or said it on the show, like, you guys are inspiring. We had no idea. We were just like, you know, we were just having conversations that we wanted to have conversations about. And I'm glad struck a chord with you to get moving.
To be honest, I feel like the first episode really started on y'all show.
Yeah.
I was really excited to share that because I was like, dang, this is exactly like at least the first half before we really got into the creative stuff. I was like, this first half is exactly what I'm working on.
Yeah.
So they're like, what's your new podcast going to be about? Go listen to their stuff. That's exactly what it's going to be. Like that first, you know, 20, 30 minutes, that's it.
Yeah.
So it was really fun to be able to do that and have that conversation with you too. So you and your podcast partner started a podcast from conversations that you two had from a live. It kind of evolved from that. Tell us more about what the goal is and what you two wanted to accomplish by actually taking that platform and moving. What was the goal of moving with that platform and making it an actual podcast?
So I'm gonna be honest with you, Jared will laugh because he was like not even thinking podcast. He was just like, okay, let's do lives, lit. And I was like, no, let's do a podcast, it'll be fun. So the goal to me, which was starting off, and even the goal overall with Not Your Enemy, was just to have open and honest conversations, period. And then because where we were just so frustrated. There was a lot of negative media coverage, you know, we're in a pandemic, we're working from home. You know, I'm seeing stuff on the TV, but I'm still required to work and function. Like I'm not emotionally triggered every single day. Mm-hmm. so we were just, that was a platform of like how it started. And then we were just like, I think you were one of our first interviews, right? Yes.
That was a good guess.
And I don't remember because we started aggressive and we did like 4 or 5 interviews in the span of 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, there's a lot of Black creatives and voices that don't get the love. And it's not even like on the, like, you know, celebrities that got a million followers, but people that we know, we admire, we appreciate, that are still being triggered just like we are, but are also doing really great things. And let's like continue the conversations. Let's talk about, you know, race relations. Let's talk about what's happening in the world, but also let's talk about you as a Black creative and how you were doing and what are you doing and how's your mental and, you know, what are you working on? Let's promote it. Let's, you know, so that was kind of after the couple interviews, that's how it kind of morphed into it. But it was really just having honest conversations, because it was kind of like our therapy. Like, that's what the speak out sessions were. It was just kind of like a voice for Black people to be like, yo, I'm mad, but I also create t-shirts, or I also create, you know, body butters, or, you know, whatever, and just feel comfortable. And I think that me and Jared did a really good job of doing that, because everybody tells us that they feel so comfortable. And it's like Black entrepreneurs and creatives and talking about all things, everything, just from a Black voice or a Black scope.
Yeah. And that's like, so this show is all about talking about things from a Black perspective. And I definitely feel like that's an underserved portion of media. I don't know if there's enough of us out there talking about that kind of stuff, but definitely you and Jared do a great job at it. Thinking about all of that, how do you feel like, I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit, but thinking about all of that, how do you feel like being Black has impacted your creativity?
Are we talking positively or negatively? What are we saying?
I mean, both. I mean, because it's real, because it can have a negative or a positive impact.
I think for a very long time, I mean, you've known me for a long time, I've kind of downplayed my creativity, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I have, like, getting into the business or even doing the consulting work that I do, it's like, I just dabble in it. So I can help where I can, but not really honing in on the value that I'm giving and presenting. So I gave a lot of people some really good deals on some work that I did for them, which I don't really regret, but it's kind of just like a lesson learned that I need to value like what's in me, and hold value in what's in me, because I think that a lot of times I question if my creativity is good enough, because I compare it to other people and maybe just mainstream as well. So I think the negative part of being creative is that it took me a while to like value what I was capable of, and even like dare to do more or learn more or feel like I could learn more. And then the positive side is like, again, I can do whatever I want. Like being Black creative, like, I don't know, like being a Black creative is you literally the sky's the limit to me. I mean, and if you want to just open that to like all creatives, cool. But I think being a Black creative, like, something dope. And I just think that the sky's the limit to you could do whatever you want. And I can create whatever I want. People like it, people don't like it. It is what it is. But I think the positive side of that is just like my mind thinks like grandiose things.
Yeah.
And some people will be like, girl, and I'm like, no, but it's possible. And hey, I got a podcast now. Like, you know what I mean? So the people that think you're crazy are the ones that will be like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. So I think we're dope.
I don't think that everybody understands how different of a footing that people of color a lot of times end up starting on.
Yeah.
And I think it's easy to take it for granted. Like I said it on your show, as a man, I don't think about what women go through.
Yeah. That was a really good snippet, just throwing that out there.
But yeah, as a man, I don't think about what women go through. It's not constantly on my mind, y'all struggles, because I'm going through my own struggles.
Right.
So when you're not a person of color, you're not sitting there thinking about, I wonder how dude down the street is doing in you know, the inner city. Wonder how those schools are. Like, most of the time, that's not on your head.
And yes, it's very true in a certain semblance, right? But we had someone on, someone I went to college with, she's a sociologist, right?
Yeah.
You might not have to experience it, but you can be empathetic to somebody else's experience, right?
Right.
But for a Black person, right? Because we're considered a minority.
Right.
We have to assimilate and have an understanding when others do not. And I'll give a prime example.
Here we go.
Well, I'm just saying, because I feel like people don't even, like, because we're like, oh, you know, maybe you don't understand. But I think that you can make the effort to understand, because Black people have spent their whole lives understanding that white people, they're not all racist. They're not all inherently racist, but right. You might experience this, or you might have to assimilate. When we talked about this on the show, in the workplace, conduct yourself a little bit different. They might say this, but they don't really mean this offensively. They might want to touch your hair, but they don't really mean it offensively. And so for us, I think there needs to be an opportunity where it flips, where there's some, and I think it's happening in some places.
Yeah.
But there needs to be more understanding from a white person to people of color, period, because we've spent all of our lives going into school and going into businesses and going into college and all that stuff, assimilating to a predominantly European, white European culture. That's normal, quote unquote, but really, is it?
Yeah.
Just gonna food for thought.
It's gonna leave that there. Just walk away from the table.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave that there.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And I mean, the world, you got to think about who the world was built for.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who was built by, but whoever it's built for, that's the norm. And yeah, we kind of like abnormal in a normal world. We just need to make sure that we're building a world that's built for everybody and not just the select few.
Absolutely. That's way better said than what I said.
No, you did a good job. You did a really good job. And going back to what you said before, though, you know, all of the classes I took, elementary, middle school, high school, college, when I got my bachelor's, when I went back to trade school, all of those classes I took, never took one financial literacy class. That never was a class curriculum. It's right. not something you can major in. It's financial literacy.
Yeah.
That mental health, that's not a requirement.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's not enough cultural conversations. And a conversation that I had on the first episode of the show is that a lot of times we're not even teaching Black education in Black History Month at all.
Yeah.
And Black history should just be history.
let me tell you something. And we talked about it on my podcast, and I was like, me as a Black woman, right?
Right.
I did not know about, I don't know if you saw Judas and the Black Messiah, Fred Hampton.
I couldn't even finish that movie. Sometimes it's so hard for me to watch those movies.
I mean, phenomenal. And I had a whole episode about this on our podcast. But for me, I was more embarrassed. I was like, I didn't know about this. Mm-hmm. It was very hard to watch. But to me, it was like, as a person of color, like, how do I not know about this? I mean, I knew about the Black Panther Party, period. But that was out of my own like parents' research. Like that was not talked about. And even like in college, that was where I got more in depth. Unless you took like the African American studies courses, you're not getting that. So to me, I was like, how do I not know about my own culture, my own history? This is my history and I have no idea about it. So to me, it was a little bit of frustrating because it is not taught, but also it's like, we gotta teach ourselves. Just another thing.
I remember I saw like part of that. I don't think I saw the whole episode, but I remember seeing part of that, and I definitely agree. And it's so hard as a person of color, as a Black person, to watch these movies where we see how times where people of color were trying to do good, and we were strategically broken down,
yeah,
from the inside out,
yeah,
and it's just really hard to watch those movies, but that's something that I want to end up doing more of. And I think I want to start like a movie club, a Black movie club, where we kind of watch movies that are hard to watch. And then on top of that, not only just leave it with the movies, but go and do some research and learn more about the actual people, see how accurate the movie was, and maybe learn a little bit more that was in there. Because whenever you do a movie, it's always a chance for embellishment in certain parts, because it has to be a little bit entertaining as well.
Yeah.
But that hard stuff, the stuff that's hard to watch, like When They See Us, that was incredibly hard to watch.
I'm going to tell you right now, didn't finish it. And I know Ava DuVernay talked about that and didn't finish it. And that's one I just can't. I know I have to, because again, you have to educate yourself, but they were kids, man. That's hard because I have a son. So I can't watch that yet. So, but I haven't watched it.
Black moms with Black sons. Yes. It's incredibly tough.
Yeah.
But I just felt like it was important for me to finish that. Like just like I'm going to finish Judas and the Black Messiah. I'm going to watch a lot more of those types of movies and read a lot more and research a lot more of that stuff, just because I feel like it's important to know and to kind of see that the stuff that's going on, this stuff ain't new.
It's not.
This stuff ain't new. Like the president at the time when the When They See Us came out, was actually in the movie.
Yeah.
Doing the same stuff that he was doing when he was president.
Yeah.
But at the time, he wasn't president. Like, it was the same subtle stuff. And it's not as subtle as people think. And it's just like, whoa, like, wow. Like, you know, people, I don't know if we have short memories or people just don't care, but it's just wild to see that kind of stuff happen. But
because it doesn't directly impact them. This is the thing. I think that if it doesn't directly impact you, you don't feel it as much because we become, and as Black people, we become desensitized to it.
Come numb to it 100%.
Like, yeah. Like my whole thing is like, because we were in a pandemic, it's like, and we were home a lot. It was just like, you seeing it all the time, but you could easily turn off the TV, whatever, go to work and live your life. I think that in general, it's been happening since the beginning of time. Like since we've been in the United States of America, it's been happening. And like I said, these movies are our joy, our pain, our happiness, our sadness. This is our voice, because otherwise, where would these stories be told?
If you're Black, learn a little bit more about your own history, because a lot of times we are ignorant to our own history. And then we wonder why certain things are happening, and it's because, oh, it's been happening. It's just, and if you're not a person of color, then you can understand why, one, some of our starting points are where it is, and why some people feel the way that they feel about us.
Right.
So do you feel like your skin color has ever played a role in opening and or closing a door?
Yeah. I think with the thing with skin color is that is a micro kind of aggression where it's not blatant, but it's blatant. I mean, if you're used to it, even amongst Black people in general, if you're darker skin. So like someone saying to a darker skin woman, like, oh, you're pretty for being a dark skinned girl. Mm-hmm. That's like, you mean that as a compliment, but it's not. Cause it's like, why can't you just say that I'm pretty?
Right.
Why does it have to be? Because is it because a darker skin means that that's unattractive or not pretty normally? So those kind of things, which happen across the board, white or Black can say that. That's still an insult. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to like business and things of that nature, I will tell you, this was a Black individual, not white. I came in and I was like, and I, you know, I just had a baby and it was unexpected. It was not what was supposed to be happening, but I went for an interview because I literally had just got off maternity leave and I like was gone the month after. But I had red in my hair. Mm. I had extensions, right? But it wasn't like my whole head wasn't red. But again, even me having to factor this because everyone has different color hair. There's our redhead.
I mean, even if it was, but I got right. you.
Redheads in the world. So I went for the interview. Decent interview. I didn't knock it out of the park. But either way, so I leave the interview. Right. And this guy was just like, oh, your hair is very interesting.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh, thanks. But to me, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get this job. Like, I don't even know what that means. Mm. And he's Black. So I think having different type of hair is a factor. Like going on job interviews, you know, I took out piercings. I made my nails like plain colors because you don't want anything to stick out to you. I've made, once I was in positions, made references to my skin. I don't necessarily know if it's ever outwardly like 100% I could say because of my skin color, this got me here or didn't get me here. But the statements around it and the statements, oh, you know, I wish I could be as tan as you. Like, that's like, what? If you are white, why do you want to be as tan as me? Like, I certain things I'm like, I don't know what response you're looking for when you say that to somebody that's Black. but I don't necessarily know I can't say a specific time where I feel like 100% I got something or didn't get something for the color of my skin. It might've been a feature or an assumption based on the color of my skin. But again, those are like, I feel like those are microaggressions that you would have to really like be familiar with to even understand or to borderline, like understand that has something to do with your skin color. If that makes sense.
No, I totally get it. It's kind of like, what is it? The pretty privilege.
Yes.
It's like the skin tone privilege. And it's something that happens between Black people too.
Yeah.
If you're fairer skinned, then, oh, you must be better. Or the opposite.
Yeah.
It all depends on which camp you stand in. And I mean, really, that is a layover from slavery.
Yes.
Yep. Trying to pit us against each other still. So if we can keep us from uniting, just make us fight ourselves. I mean, if you ever want to defeat an enemy, make them fight among themselves. You're good.
Yeah. So I forgot who said it. I think it was a comedian, like where it was like the crab in the barrel mentality.
Yeah.
Where it's like but crabs aren't supposed to be in a barrel. So of course they're going to fight each other. And I was like, never thought about it like that, but that's true. He's like, who put the crabs in the barrel? Because they're not supposed to be in there. Oh, there you go.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
What is your favorite song or movie talking about, like from a Black creative song, movie, project, basically, maybe a piece of art, maybe a poem? What is your favorite? Because I go towards Strange Fruit, performed by Nina Simone. I know she's not the original artist, but.
Well, first of all, when you said movie, I was like, I already know. And then you said poems or whatever. Okay. So John Singleton and Spike Lee are my, when I wanted to be a director and thought I was going to make movies in my back in my heyday, they were my inspiration. So anything that they've created, like, is pretty much top notch. But if I had to pick a movie, it would be, Higher Learning. History Repeats Itself. That was 20 years before Columbine. So I just want to throw that out there. So if you haven't seen that, it's a really good movie.
I thought you were going to say Do the Right Thing when you said Spike Lee.
Higher Learning is John Singleton. Mm-hmm. Do the Right Thing, yes, is I cry every time. Can't watch it. I can't watch it till the end.
Fight the power.
Literally. songs, that's one of them.
There you go. Public Enemy.
Yeah. The poem is hard. I would say Strange Fruit was number one. Maya Angelou, Phenomenal Woman. Langston Hughes. You're asking too much. Langston Hughes is a lot, though. So just say all Langston Hughes. I'm just going to throw that out.
Just all.
Because he's, phenomenal. That's all.
So when it's all said and done, what is the thing that you want to be remembered most for?
Come on, man. I'm still figuring it out. That's a question. And that's a question. Do you have the answer for that? Do you know for yourself personally?
I mean, so for me, I remember when my grandfather died, I was talking to a friend of mine who was at the funeral, and I was talking about legacy. And one of the things she told me was that my grandfather's legacy was all of us that he left behind, all of the little seeds that he planted in each and every one of his children and grandchildren's lives. And that was a big part of his legacy. And that's something that lives on as long as we are alive. As long as we're alive, a part of him lives on. For me, right now, not having any kids yet, but, you know, one, I want to be remembered fondly by my family. And number two, I definitely want to create something that transcends my mortal lifetime.
Yeah.
Something that I can leave behind for future generations to maybe take a look at and hopefully inspire. Mm-hmm. Just because I know how a seed works, you know. Yeah. I think I heard a minister saying one time, if you plant a seed and you get a tree, and then from that tree you can get multiple fruits with multiple seeds. So you never know the difference that planting one seed can have. So one conversation can inspire one person, and inspire two people that could inspire 1,000 people apiece. And next thing you know, just from that seed you planted, that grew to millions of people being touched by that one little seed. So that is kind of what I just want to be remembered for: doing good, being genuine, and loving my family.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, for me, I always, like, my passion in life is to always help people, and sometimes to my detriment. And that's no shade. I'm just, people, you know, you can overextend yourself a lot.
No, I get it. I totally do.
I that's my joy, man. I love, and I don't always need anything back in return. So for me, you know, because I have a son, I definitely want to leave some generational wealth in his, you know, I want to teach him the right way, because I don't necessarily think the generations before us no shade to anybody, because I got to say that lovingly to our parents and elders. But I think it's just different now. I think that they were trying to survive and now we're trying to thrive. So I need some generational wealth. I want to be remembered as doing everything that I wanted to do. I want, like, not to be fearless, but like I want my son and people that knew me to be inspired by all the things that I was able to do, that I had faith to do, be remembered by something I said or did and kind of carry that with them. Cause that's really where legacy, you know, even you just talking about, you know, your grandfather, even like the slightest words or actions that somebody does, as long as I made a mark in this world, which is really everything you do, every project you know, complete, that's good with me.
I think it was Denzel Washington, and he could have been quoting something else, but I heard Denzel Washington, he was talking about a man on his deathbed, and on the side of his bed was all of the dreams that he had. And he said, a dream without any action is just a dream. And he says at the end of this man's life, he was laying in his deathbed, and all these dreams and ideas that he had along his life were all beside him on his deathbed, and said, we were given to you because you had the power to make us a reality, but you didn't do anything. So now we die with you.
No, like, no joke. My pastor says all the time. I think that was one of the things that stuck with me. Right when I joined the church, he was like, you know, in the cemetery, there's a whole lot of dreams. There's a whole lot of books. There's a whole lot of businesses that never came into fruition.
Right.
If you're called to do it and that's in your spirit to do it, then you need to do it. And so that's why I'm like, my brain be going fast and I be taking on, you know, 30,000 projects. But if it's in me to do, I'm gonna try to do it, because I don't want to leave this earth I want to leave this earth without completing everything that I feel I'm destined to do.
It's funny you talking about generational wealth. That's one of the topics that we are having on the show. It's talking about generational wealth. And, you know, it is a difference between survival mentality and thriving mentality, because you think about, it's just a perspective that a lot of, unfortunately, Black people and people of color aren't used to representing from.
Right.
When you're coming from survival, you represent a different way. You're not trying to you don't always have the luxury of storing, because you need that right now.
Yeah.
You can't store it up for the next generation, because you need what you have plus what they can do. And then y'all need to put that together just to make it through the day. I think it's really beautiful to see how many athletes and entertainers, Black entertainers, are starting to really start to reinvest in themselves and get businesses and products together so that we can actually spend money in our own community.
The nonprofit I work for, we focus on financial. Part of our mission is to focus on financial literacy. And it took me coming into my 30s to realize what that really meant. You know, I left college with debt. You know, I spent my 20s not being irresponsible, but also not making enough to pay down the debt that I took out. And what does that mean? And things of that nature. Just education, I think, is really important, because the world is set up for a lot of minorities anyway to start off on the wrong foot. So to be able to understand, okay, well, if you took all this money and you owe all this money, this is what this means, and this is what you need to do, get out of it, and investing and all that fun stuff, I think wasn't a primary focus, because again, survival and, you know, wanting, like, I was like my mom's generation, right? Our parents. I just think that their goal was for us to have more opportunities, right? To go to school, because maybe they didn't get to complete that. So their goals were different than maybe what mine is, because the world is different. So I don't really blame my mother or any of them, because again, based off the circumstances of that time, that's what they wanted for their children. My child is something different, because now I see the opportunities and see what we can do and what, like, but seeing the resources that maybe someone in the white community could get, like you talked about the schools and things of that nature, you want to have the right footing and the right education when it comes to just generational wealth and finances in general is important.
Shannon, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure as always. Thank you for having me.
So that's all I have for you today. But before you go, I would like to put some spotlight on melanin. Spotlight on Melanin is the part of the show where I like to spotlight a creator, influencer, artist, business owner, or activist of color. This week, I would like to spotlight Creative Bree. Creative Bree is an incredibly talented graphic designer, illustrator, and painter. I recently purchased a print from her, and I can't wait to buy more. On her page, she sells original paintings, prints, stickers, apparel, and enamel pens. Make sure you go check her out on her Instagram at Creative Bree, and that's CreativeBree. And while you're there, why don't you purchase a couple prints? If you or someone you know would like the chance to be featured on Spotlight on Melanin, send us an email at spotlight@stilltalkingblack.com. Please include links to their social media and why you feel like they should be spotlighted. So again, thank you everyone for listening. Still Talking Black is a Crown Culture Media production. It is produced by me, Richard Dodds. Music from the show was created by the DJ Blue. Please make sure to rate and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting app. You can follow the show on Instagram at Still Talking Black. Until next time, keep talking.